From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Please join me in welcoming my friend, Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker.
In 27 days, Illinois will celebrate our state's 200th anniversary. Join me in beginning our third century in Illinois with hope and optimism and living every day better for the 200 years we lived before it.
I would like to say thank you to all the people of Illinois for the opportunity to serve you.
Hi, everybody. Oh my gosh, we did it. We're still waiting on news around the country, but I feel confident that I'm going to have a lot of great women to work alongside.
I think you should feel very encouraged about what happened at the state level tonight with our new governor, with our new attorney general, with so many good people that did make it through.
I'm going to continue to do what I have done over the past 5.5 years to put good ideas into law. And that's what bipartisanship's about, whether I'm in the majority like I have been, or whether I go back and I'm in the minority party.
Some of the voices from election night 2018 here in Illinois, that last one, Congressman Rodney Davis, one of the few Republicans in Illinois still smiling after the election. It was a big night for Democrats who will control all of state government. They also picked up a couple of big congressional seats as well. And we'll talk about J.B. Pritzker's big win and what it all means going forward. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us today is NPR Illinois' Daisy Contreras and Brian Mackey, our Statehouse editor. And joining us today from Chicago is actually the Springfield reporter, Hannah Meisel, for the Daily Line. And she works for them. And thanks for being with us again, Hannah. Good to always have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Daisy, I'm going to throw it to you first. I guess it was a blue wave, at least in Illinois.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people were actually expecting. Democrats dominated Tuesday night, easily taking all statewide races on the ballot. So not only the seat for governor, but also attorney general, secretary of state, treasurer, comptroller. None were too close to call. And, you know, especially interesting here, Secretary of State Jesse White, in particular, won his sixth term.
Well, that was no shock, I guess. And I guess if you've been reading the polls going into this, that really not too many surprises on that statewide ballot, because J.B. Pritzker pulled out a huge victory, as the polls were indicating he might. And Hannah, I want you to weigh in on this as well. Brian, I'm going to start with you, though. How did Pritzker do it?
Money, I guess, is one way. And, he spent what is, by all accounts, a record amount for somebody seeking a statewide office. Somebody, I even read a report this week that he spent more than President Trump spent of his own fortune when seeking the presidency. That's one way he did it. He just flooded Illinois airwaves with advertising since the middle of last year. And then the other way he did it was by choosing to run against one of the least popular incumbents in America. Governor Rauner, really, since the end of the budget impasse, he lost about 10 percentage points on his approval rating, dropped down to 30 points, and in some cases even lower than that, and he never really recovered. He did end up getting a higher share of the vote than that popularity level would suggest, but not nearly enough to overtake the Pritzker juggernaut.
And Hannah, this was over pretty quick on election night. Within just really a few minutes of the polls closing, it was clear that Pritzker had won.
Right. I was at Rauner's party, and I wouldn't call the mood subdued, but I would call the attendees who were, are going to be among the most loyal of Rauner's supporters. They seemed very resigned. I overheard, quite a number of them saying, well, wish it could go the other way, even before the polls closed. I think another thing to keep in mind about how Pritzker, his strategy played out, was from the very beginning, You know, Pritzker came, he started campaigning, I believe, in April of 2017. That's when we were still in this budget impasse that would eventually last 736 days. But, you know, even then, Pritzker was pushing the message that Rauner is a failure, a failed governor, you know, failing Illinoisans on all levels. He featured a lot of stories. You know, he sought out citizens who had been hurt by the budget impasse. And I think that by jumping on that message early, no matter what the Rauner campaign threw at him, I mean, we had the toilet situation. We had the wiretap tapes between him and Governor Blagojevich in 2008, you know, saying pretty offensive things. Those tapes were released both last summer and this past winter. But because Pritzker got out in front so early, because he could, because of all the money he had and was willing to spend, I think that's what did it.
And Charlie, your thoughts on this race? We've been watching it. It seems like it has gone on forever because so much money was spent starting back well over a year ago on advertising. Your thoughts on what the final results showed?
Well, I think the final results weren't very surprising. And looking back in retrospect, you could say that the governor put himself in a box right from the get-go when, instead of choosing a bipartisan way forward, he became very determined that it was his way or the highway. He came in with this very broad agenda, his turnaround agenda. A lot of it involved the kind of things that Democrats are never going to support. Democrats will never be for right to work. And so to insist that this is a demand that I won't yield on, you're just setting yourself up for failure. If you look back at the previous Republican governors we've had, ones that I've been privileged enough, I guess, to cover, going back to Dick Ogilvie, they were always able to work with Democrats. They, instead of setting up this, it's my way or the highway, you got to do this or you're not going to get a budget, they would find common ground. They'd say, well, I know you can't go all the way on this, but can you go this far? And the Democrats would say, yeah, we can. Can you do this? Yeah. So it was coming together, finding common ground, instead of labeling your opponents as corrupt and as people who are responsible for the downfall of Illinois, the kind of way that he vilified Madigan. I mean, if you can count, you know that Madigan has a majority of Democrats. To pass anything through the House, you got to get a majority of votes. You don't have them. So do you want to vilify Madigan at every hand's turn? Or are you going to try and figure out a way to work with the guy?
And like Hannah and Charlie said, going without a budget for 2 years didn't help, which hurt social service agencies, placed several state universities on junk status. A big mess to clean up. Rauner also constantly clashed with Democrats over taxes, term limits, and workers' comp. And additionally, he angered people within his own party after signing HB 40, which would expand abortion coverage under taxpayer money and further fragmenting the Republican Party.
Yeah, he didn't have much of a base to, you know, look back on after, basically 3 years when he began his reelection campaign last fall, because he had thoroughly angered so many in his own party. But then the other thing that I just really, it cannot be overstated, that this election was also a referendum on Donald Trump. And, you know, I think the Pritzker campaign, you know, pretty much right out of the gate, they started saying that Rauner was basically in cahoots with Trump. Of course, those of us who pay attention to state politics knows that's a ridiculous thing to say. In fact, Rauner has tried his very best to toe the line with Trump, you know, hardly ever saying his name. Of course, you know, after a year of that, we saw him try to go to that rally a couple weeks ago. But not that notwithstanding, you know, I think that people, regular voters who aren't paying the closest attention, feel like, okay, Trump's a Republican, Rauner's a Republican, and I don't like Trump. So that's where we're going to go.
And Brian, I think you wanted to get in there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. I was just going to go, not to pile on Governor Rauner, but, you know, I've talked to some former administration officials in recent days, ones who left a while ago. And, you know, one in particular said that the governor really misread his mandate and tried to go big when he came into office, you know, going after both public sector unions, which is the kind of Wisconsin model that Scott Walker pioneered and that a lot of Republicans think is a good idea because it has the benefit of reducing the cost of government as well as undermining a key funding source for the Democratic Party. But he also wanted to go after private sector unions, which is not what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin. He took them one at a time in terms of creating these local right-to-work zones and trying to limit the prevailing wages that are paid for construction projects in around the state. And the staff said that he just didn't really listen to them. And I think that the governor never really seemed to grasp, even though he paid lip service in recent weeks to the idea that Democrats, you know, maybe have good intentions and they have their own ideas about policy. But he never really seemed to internalize that. And you can tell because when he gave, like, I think he gave his concession speech, he said, now is the time to come together. And then a little later in the speech, he says, you know, we should look to other states and learn what they have to teach us. And these are blue states. The Democrats and Republicans can do these things together. And I just don't think he grasps that a lot of his ideas are anathema to what Democrats think is good public policy. Whether you agree with him or disagree with him, I'm just not sure that he really understands that. In some ways, it's kind of like, Hannah was talking about voters who don't pay that much attention. It's like he's somebody who just doesn't seem to grasp that fundamental, idea that reasonable people can disagree in politics. That's kind of essential to being a politician who gets something done in a divided state.
Even the mathematics of the situation, one might note that Scott Walker's path was a lot easier because he was working with the Republican-controlled General Assembly.
Charlie, I was going to ask you, because I think when we look at this, Bruce Rauner, in my opinion, had all the makings of somebody who could have been a successful governor. I mean, first of all, he had the money, so he didn't need to worry about trying to curry favor with a lot of special interest groups. He had the ability to fund his own campaign. Secondly, though, he is what a lot of people who have been successful as Republicans running the state of Illinois in the past, when it comes to social issues, he's a moderate, and so were they. And he seems to have that. Now, the you can make a point about the union issue. I'm not sure still that that's what sunk him, but it did seem to take his focus away, and it created a divide there, I think, with Democrats. But he never seemed to understand that legislative process, as Brian was saying. And I think that, in the end of the day, was his downfall.
Well, yeah, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier about you need 60 votes in the House and 30 votes in the Senate. And if your party doesn't have it, then you have to figure out a way to work with the other side. And if you're going to work with the other side, you don't constantly demonize them. I mean, he just totally misread his mandate, and apparently he misread the art of politics, how one reaches compromise with folks who legitimately have different ideas than you do.
Well, Daisy, let me also turn to a different race. We'll have plenty of time to talk about the incoming governor and the governor who is still in office for a little while. But the attorney general election, that was one that I think we assumed would be a tighter race. It seemed to be what we were hearing about polling. In the end of the night, not the case. Kwame Raoul defeating Erica Harold rather easily.
Yeah, that was not close at all as we had expected originally. And I think that the national politics here had a lot to do with Raoul's win. Again, Trump going around campaigning for other Republicans and bringing up the migrant caravan and, you know, saying, you know, his regular talking points. Raoul heavily campaigned on the idea that he would join other attorneys general across the country and stand up against President Trump's policies. And I think this was a convincing point for many voters. Harold was more reluctant to come out and say that she would do the same. And I think the issue of abortion was another big issue, too, with Harold being a little, you know, more conservative on that standpoint and Raoul being a little more about women's rights.
Well, I want to take a look, and we'll talk about the state legislature in a little bit here, but I want to take a look at some changes that the state seems to be going through geographically and when it comes to the politics. And this was on display in Chicago's suburbs on election night, where a couple of races for Congress went over to Democrats, Democrats defeating incumbents. Lauren Underwood beat Randy Holtgren, and Sean Casten defeating the incumbent Peter Roskam. And what does that tell us about the suburbs, Hannah, as far as are they now more blue than ever?
I think that definitely election night results showed that especially suburban women, wanted to show that they are angry with the Trump administration, especially, you know, his attacks on women and other politicians aligned with Trump, their attacks on women. Would I say it's permanent? In a way, I think that they would be, you know, these independent voters would be more willing to vote for Democrats in the future. However, we also see this creeping progressivism that's, you know, going to come to the state house. We've already seen it in Chicago, in City Hall. There's a pretty huge contingent of progressives now, and it's making its way down to Springfield. And I think that if progressivism keeps marching along, you know, we have people who are aligned with Bernie Sanders and want some, you know, things like single-payer health care. I think things like that are going to keep, you know, a lot of suburban women not aligned with the Democratic Party. You know, they might be a lot more willing to vote for the Democratic Party, maybe even do some activism within that. But I'm not sure that they would be ready to identify themselves as full-blown, you know, true blue liberals if, you know, this progressivism keeps marching along, because there might be some things that they're genuinely uncomfortable with that come out of this movement.
And what I find especially interesting, too, with the Lauren Underwood win is, you know, she's a 32-year-old nurse who previously worked for the Obama administration. She's a first-time candidate. And she's also the first black woman to represent that district, which is 87% white. So, you know, when Underwood was talking to her supporters, she said that women have found success in these midterm elections because they are speaking on issues that have been previously been ignored or not taken as seriously, such as background checks for gun sales, paid family leave. So I think Underwood's and Kasten's victories kind of show possibly, yeah, a changing nature of the suburbs in terms probably of demographics and where these voters stand.
And Brian, your thoughts on that?
I think that's right, although I think that you can't also underestimate the Trump factor in those areas. Yes, we have seen the demographics change. It's remarkable that DuPage County, which a generation ago, but even half a generation ago, was like the heart of the Republican Party in Illinois. Until last year, both of the legislative Republican leaders were from that area, the western suburbs there, because though of demographic changes that, you know, we did see Pritzker win, but also the Trump factor. I think that there was the suburban women are said to be the sort of swing group. And if you remove that factor from this election or from a future election, you know, would the votes rebalance themselves a little bit? I think that's a possibility. I mean, every election is has its unique elements, and so those can't be discounted.
Well, there was a Trump factor, I think, maybe downstate. The only place it may have really helped was Mike Bost in the far southern Illinois congressional district. He did win re-election, and actually, I think in a more easy fashion than we had anticipated early on, Rodney Davis narrowly winning in central Illinois. So really, Charlie, this is where the Republican stronghold now is in the state, is the middle of the state and south, minus a few pockets here and there. But at the same time, we know that we're going to lose population in the next census and probably lose at least one, maybe two congressional seats. It's likely going to be these seats merged together. There's going to be less representation of Republicans in Illinois going forward. That's pretty much a given.
Yeah, I think it's true. And I think part of it is the Republican Party at the national level today is a far cry from what the Republican Party was at the national level, say, 40 years ago. You have a guy who, for all appearances, is a racist xenophobe leading the cry, and most Illinois Republicans over time don't really respond to that kind of dog whistle. You think back about the people we've had as governor, people like Jim Thompson or Jim Egger or Dick Ogilvy. They didn't go for that kind of nonsense, and the majority of the people in the Republican Party then didn't. You have a demographic change. You have the fact that in DuPage County, in the first decade of this century, one person was elected from a Senate district, mostly in DuPage County, who was a Democrat. That would have been unheard of years ago. We elected a couple people out in Kane County, district centered on Aurora, another centered on Elgin. That would have been unheard of a generation ago to elect Democrats from Kane County. The difference is the demographics are changing. The increase in number of people who identify as Hispanic and who are very turned off by this racist, xenophobic message from Washington, you know, build the wall, take the kids away from the parents, send them back. Yeah. We're going to send the army to defend our borders. That stuff doesn't play well in the Hispanic community. And that's something that Republicans in the past in Illinois would not have endorsed.
Well, we also saw Democrats dominate election night in the Illinois State House races as well. And Hannah, and then Brian, if you want to weigh in on this as well, fill us in on where we're at going into January as far as what's the majorities look like. And is this, again, such a blue state that the Democrats not only control the statewide offices, but have even a stronger hold on the legislative races?
Well, Mackie, you might have to help me out with the exact numbers, but long story short, Madigan got his supermajority back in the House. We have at least 71 Democrats that we know for sure. I think we might have a couple more when we're done with, absentee ballots, although we don't call them absentee ballots in Illinois. In the House, I was just looking before this, and, you know, there's something like 40-plus Democratic uncontested seats, 10 seats on the Republican side. And then of those, there were only 10-ish, maybe truly close races. A couple of things that I wanted to point out, down way, way down near Paducah on the Ohio River, yes. Natalie Phelps Finney, who had inherited the seat from family member Brandon Phelps, Democrat. The Democrats have now lost hold of that seat. A guy named Patrick Windhurst, Republican, pretty easily defeated her. But then, you know, pretty close to there, you have another district, Democrat Jerry Costello, pretty pro Second Amendment. You know, as far as Democrats go, he fits his district. He's pretty conservative. He easily held off his opponent. And then in the Metro East, we saw, couple House and Senate races where Democrats held on to their seats. You know, we had former Representative Republican Dwight Kay trying to make another run for his old seat. He did not get his seat back. Democrat Katie Stewart held on to it. So, you know, I think that as much as there was hand-wringing about downstate areas going to become more Republican, the Democratic majority held on to the majority of those seats.
I think the bottom line here is that the Democrats are going to have supermajorities in the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. I think there are questions about how real those are in terms of, you know, for things like the graduated income tax, where you really need a supermajority to change the Constitution, because some of those Democrats are going to have won in seats that are still considered, you know, fairly strong Republican areas and anti-tax areas. But for things that only take a simple majority, that Governor-elect Pritzker has talked about legalizing marijuana. He's talked about legalizing sports betting in Illinois. Certainly all sorts of policies that business groups will oppose, and whether it be the minimum wage or changing workers' compensation, business regulation, things like that. You know, will the Democrats have an easy time of that? It certainly seems like that will be easier for them to do. The other big thing, I think, is that this sets them up well from a Democratic standpoint for gerrymandering the next decade of power in Illinois government, because Governor-elect Pritzker is going to be in office until at least 2023. That's long after the decennial census coming up in 2020. And Democrats now have a pretty comfortable margin from which to lose seats if they, you know, even assuming they do lose seats in a presidential election year, which is not typically the trend in Illinois. Democrats tend to do a little better in presidential election years in the past, although, you know, things are changing here. But, you know, they are in a good position to redraw the maps to maximize their advantage in the legislature.
And that's a good point, Brian. About 30 seconds or so here. But real quick, Hannah, I'll go to you on this. Speaker Madigan did respond to the election results. What did he have to say?
Oh, yeah. He put out a 4-page document, press release on Wednesday. It was one of the stranger documents I've ever read. And it read to me like 4 years of pent-up feelings. Basically, it said, you know, Republicans tried, especially Rauner, tried to tie all this wrongdoing to me. He also alleged that Republicans were wrongheaded in the wording of their advertisement. He said, oh, Republicans accused me of literal violence, which is one reading of their ads. But basically, he said, you know, you all tried, and I still survived.
And he certainly has, and we'll see if he thrives as well going forward. Time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, it looks at this moment as though the Democratic majority in the House will be 74 seats out of the 118. That would be the largest percentage, not the most seats, because they had 101 back when we elected 177 members, but since we've gone to the single-member districts, that would be the highest percentage ever with single-member districts, because it'll come out to be about 64-65%, and it'll be the second highest ever in history, the highest being after the 1964 election when the Democrats won 2/3 of the Illinois House seats.
All right, Daisy?
Yeah, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin is calling for an investigation into why the Trump and Rauner administrations failed to inform people living near two Lake County industrial facilities in Gurnee and Waukegan about cancer risks from toxic air pollution.
Brian?
The results out of Champaign County I thought were particularly interesting this week, and here I'm relying on some reporting and an editorial from the News Gazette, the newspaper there, but the Democrats swept the offices, and for the first time outside of Will County, there will be a second county in Illinois that has the county executive form of government. And according to the News Gazette, this was a plan hatched by local Republicans to help them gain some power over the Democratic County board there. But Democratic turnout was so high in Champaign County that the idea ended up backfiring, and now Democrats have that office as well. And this is in spite of the attention on voting day seemed to be turning to Champaign County, because there were a lot of social media posts coming out of the University of Illinois showing very long lines of students waiting to vote, and even some charges from Democratic legislators about Republican officials there, you know, putting too few polling places in as a means of voter suppression. But that is not how it worked out.
Okay. And Hannah?
Well, you all had serious ones. I've got two quick fun ones from election night. So election night at Rauner's party, I asked his spokesman, you know, what's the deal with the bar? And he said, okay, everything's complimentary. It was wine and beer, no liquor. But then after the concession speech, it turned into a cash bar. Then I headed over to Kwame Raoul's party, and I got there just in time. The music there, so good. It was like the best cheesy 80s, 90s wedding dance playlist. And me and another reporter kind of cornered Lisa Madigan to chat with her. Lisa Madigan also introduced Raoul for his victory speech. And the music was so good, she couldn't help but dance in the middle of our interview. And I don't blame her.
Okay, well, we'll move on and talk more next week. Thanks to our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Hannah Meisel. And remember, you can get a podcast of the show at NPR One and find us at stateweek.org. Production support provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.